Jack Redpath is one of the players that has been nominated for the AFL State Screening from the Bendigo Bombers. Seen his name amongst the best this season. Cam Peterson has definitely put himself under AFL recruiters' watch list recently. That noise in the background is Jim's jacket.
Oh, sorry. That's me.
Is it just you, is it?
It's me going like that.
Well,
adjusting my clothing.
It doesn't...
Sorry about that. So, yeah, see, I don't hear it through the headphones.
Cameron Peterson is definitely up there as a chance, or definitely a rookie spot at one of the AFL clubs, you'd imagine. Cameron Peterson of the Box Hill Hawks. My tip for the Liston medal, I think he's a big chance. He's definitely played some consistent football in season 2009. Has been amongst the best many times. Jared Dalton, well, hasn't he been a player that really has developed under Gary Ayres and just at his time at Port Melbourne, seeing him very gangly and coming through the VFL reserves. Jared has put some body size on and can play at both ends of the ground and has been a real linchpin for the Port Melbourne side's defence in season 2009. Has taken some big sculpts and obviously big body defenders are hard to find at any level. So there might be a chance for Jared Dalton to extend or to pursue a career in the AFL. If the ABC have any word over this player, he'd be on an AFL list for sure. Sam Dwyer. He is one player. Obviously, AFL recruiters spent a lot of time watching the ABC games for the best video coverage, and they see Sam Dwyer performing very well. Three best on grounds, as we mentioned before. Dane Rampair of Williamstown. Can't say I can remember calling him in season 2009, but we'll definitely follow up and get some word from Williamstown over the weekend about Dane Rampair. Paddy Rose. Some talk that Patrick Rose might follow in Liam Pickens' footsteps and find himself with a spot on the Western Bulldogs rookie list in season 2010. And Marcus Marigliani, well, he is definitely one player that will be looking. I'm going to post a question to you, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
The Gold Coast Football Club,
yep.
Obviously they will be very interested in this year's state screening and what players don't actually make it. Cameron Peterson and Jared Dalton would definitely be two players that would add some height and experience and strength to that lineup going forward. Dwyer and Magrigliani would add some depth to any midfield going forward. And Patrick Rose could be that small forward option inside the forward 50. So those, seven players that have been selected as to go into the state screening and testing, they must be a chance at playing. It's the best time to be a young player coming through the competition because with an extra 42 players required in the competition and the Gold Coast obviously not having a direct feeder situation in the QFL to go and generate some youth and talent, they're going to have to go outside the square and try and generate some players. We've seen Liam Pickin obviously be a big name, but Aaron Davies, Josh Gibson, just to name a few, come through the competition. Robin Nahas. We've missed calling him in that Port Melbourne forward line this year after 60 goals last year. The Gold Coast Football Club will be spending a year in the VFL competition, as was mentioned last weekend in 2010.
But don't remember Guy McKenna. He's the coach of the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
And he might be going westward. That's what he might be doing.
What do you mean?
Going home to see what's available in the waffle. That's what I reckon he might be doing.
Well, in terms of recruiting?
In terms of recruiting, I reckon he might go and look. The waffle's been very good to the AFL. Some of the players that have come out of the waffle to the AFL. What? You have a look at the players that have come out the waffle in recent times and slotted state into the AFL.
I am getting sick and tired of having conversations with people about the waffle and the sandful against the VFL. Players that play in the TAC Cup competition, if they are properly aligned with their VFL players, so these are players who don't get drafted as 18-year-olds, would go through and play in this competition. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. Too many players are lost to the system. They get to 18 and they no longer play football at a high level and they go and play in local competitions and they make good money playing for some of these sides in the suburbs. Now, the players that get drafted out of the waffle and out of the sandful that are at 21 and 22 years of age that come and have an impact, I'm not discrediting them as footballers at all, but the system that they play under is totally different. Hmm. They can't go and play in local suburban competitions. It's not right. The money there. They have to go and play in the Waffle to make money and make a living for themselves playing football. So the competition for draft choices in this state is totally different. AFL clubs are recruiting players out of the TSC Cup in a lot higher levels than what they are out of the Sandfall and the Waffle. If we were taking 60 kids or 30 kids out of the Sandfall and 30 kids out of the Waffle, you wouldn't see all these kids having an impact. Yes, Daniel Rich has spent 3 years at senior football, but the TAC Cup kids don't get that same opportunity.
That's right. That's why it's got to change.
No, well, it might not necessarily have to change. There have been plenty of players that have come through the TAC Cup competition and have had a major impact and won Brownlows. If you wanted to go through and actually look at the last Brownlow winners since 2000, you'd be surprised just how many of those kids have actually come through the TAC Cup competition. Mm-hmm. So I'm sick of that argument that Waffle and Sandfall train their kids better. Yes, they play against senior bodies. Their opportunities are totally different. The TAC Cup competition kids are trained from 16 and 15 years of age and get themselves prepared for the AFL.
Yeah, what I was saying is the ready-made players, their strike rate is a lot better.
No.
It is. If you get five ready-made players coming into the system and hitting the ground running, that's better than bringing in 60 players and only 20 of them.
Reece Palmer spent his second year injured on the sidelines. Daniel Rich is a player that's broken the mould. There are only two players that have made the impact playing senior football. Yes, Fremantle have done pretty well, but Fremantle were in a position where they had to blood juniors coming through. Stephen Hill's another player that stepped out of the Waffle into senior AFL season football. But that is only two or three examples of that actually working. There are plenty of kids that come from the TAC Cup competition that have made an impact at AFL level as well. The names just don't come and jump at you straight away because there's so many of them coming through the system. So
that's what I'm saying. You've got a small field.
You've got Daniel Rich and Stephen Hill.
Yeah, and there's others.
If you want me to go through the draft book out of last year and see how many players made an impact this year,
mm-hmm.
Where did Liam Anthony get drafted from?
I'm not sure, but...
See, so no, we'll have to go through and check that, Jim, because the Sandfall and Waffles are totally different structure to what we've got here, and there are plenty of kids that have gone through from the VFL that have played in the TAC Cup competition and made it as well. So when I say in the VFL, I mean they've plied their trade as 18 and 19-year-olds, and when given their chance to play in the AFL, a bit like the apprenticeship that a lot of those kids have faced before being drafted in the Waffle and the Sandfall, they've made an impact when they've been called on to make their debuts. Jaden Post would have to be one player who'd have to put his hand up to say he's made a real impact in season 2009 when given the chance he comes straight out of the TAC Cup competition. Port Melbourne versus Sandringham. Looking at the lineup there for the Port Melbourne side, you don't see many changes on last weekend's performance. A couple of names there on the interchange bench with O'Farrell and Mr. Kennedy. But you imagine they'd go through pretty... unchanged from last weekend. Their players are really starting to play well. Patrick Hassett is definitely one player who doesn't get the same accolades as some of his counterparts, but I thought his performance to get Port Melbourne back in the game last week was outstanding, and he's been used as a link man on the wing position. He's been fantastic this year, Patrick Hassett. Ryan McMahon returned from flu and looks like he needs a game to find his feet once again, but overall, Port Melbourne are really starting to gel and play some good football. They just need to be able to do it consistently, and now they play every game at TAC Oval. I think Port Melbourne have got one hand on the Premiership Cup if they can continue their momentum. The interesting stat out of that one is that Port Melbourne have never lost a game at TAC Oval under Gary Ayres, so something would have to change for them to face their first loss. They played the Zebras, and not many changes to that lineup from last weekend, which is surprising. There'll be a few players come in and out of that lineup because... there's a few St Kilda players there listed in the final 22 that we've got in front of us here. Hudson would be likely to play, and Luke Ball, I think he's been dropped again this weekend, has he? Well, he hasn't, I don't know.
He's been dropped.
So he'll be playing in the VFL once again. Luke Ball would have to come under a couple of players' names, a couple of recruiters' names in terms of trade bait next year. Maguire, can't see him there, the big goose, the goose watch.
Geez, Hammy's got the better of him.
Yeah, hopefully he can get himself back on the park before the end of the season, or you might see him be on the trade table next year, and you'd imagine that it would be a club that would be interested in Goose Maguire's services, and you get a top bloke and a good footballer. Now, who's your tip, Jim Hines? Because it's a couple of minutes to 10 o'clock. It usually takes us 20 minutes to do this. So going through, no real big surprises there for Port Melbourne. Nixon, Dalton, Brewer, the backs. Half-back is McGrath, Baird and Fleming. The centre line, Dwyer, Robbins, Hassett. Half forward line, Dillon, Milhewson and Kane. The forward line is McLaren, DeLuca and Batsanis. The rucks, Fanning, Pinwell, McMahon and then the benches. So pretty strong lineup there. We won't go through the Sandringham lineup because plenty of changes, but no major changes there. Sortner, full forward, Summers in the centre. So pretty much standard from last weekend. Who's your tip?
Port Melbourne have won the last three, two of them at Sandy, believe it or not. So they do travel very well. It's 8-5 in favour of Sandringham, but a lot of them were before 2007 when they won eight of the nine clashes there. So in my opinion, Port Melbourne should continue a beat in Sandringham, should make it four in a row. Port lost last week, but that was against probably one of the flag favourites. Sandringham have been very, very ordinary, just winning two of their last seven games, one of those being a bye, so two of the last six actually playing. Port Melbourne have won actually five of the last seven, so they're doing quite well. Port should win.
I heard a bit of a ruckus towards the left of me, Jim. And
it's Simon.
Simon Petch. We haven't got to his game. He'll be broadcasting on Sunday, but one of the mainstays of the football broadcasting. We'll have a chat to him before the show finishes up. And Collingwood versus Frankston. Well, we won't go through the Collingwood lineup, but as we mentioned, the Frankston lineup is pretty much unchanged from last weekend. Who's your tip in that game at Visy Park, Jimbo?
Frankston were excellent last week. But Collingwood, they've got a plethora of Collingwood listed players from the AFL squad. So based on what Frankston did to Sandy last week, you'd think that form was very good, and they should continue winning, hopefully. They've come good at the wrong end of the season. If this was round five, you'd think Frankston were in for a good season. So Frankston have only won once their three clashes with an average score of, it's irrelevant what the average score is because it's 113-88 in favour of Collingwood. But probably Frankston at this stage, they played very well last week. So I'm putting a line through Collingwood and taking Frankston.
There's so much on the line here for Collingwood. With Rocker and Dawes inside that forward line, Pollard's out at the wrong time for Frankston. I think, Jim, if he was back central defender there against Big Rocker or Chris Dawes, you'd give him a chance. But against a team that's going to have so many players available to them, the Collingwood side has, one injury, I think, at this stage of the season. So they'll just be too strong, and they'll beat Frankston, unfortunately. But you never know. Frankston have made that end-of-season pact to try and ruffle the finals. If they can get over the line, well, that will leave the finals race open to the final round. If Collingwood win, they are through. Werribee versus Geelong, the Battle of the Cats tonight at Chernside Park. It'll be about our broadcast game if we can get there. Werribee versus Geelong, Jim. No Podziadli inside that forward line for the Cats. Brad Ottens has been dropped, and Tanais is also in there. There's a couple of young Geelong players listed to play against the Werribee side. It still has Nathan Thompson inside their forward line. Riggio is there. Barlow, a chance for the VFL team of the year. He's continuing to play well. Bongetti's on the bench. Where can you see that game, the result going that way?
Yeah, 12 times they've clashed since 2003. Werribee hold a 5-7 deficit to Geelong. And Geelong have won three of the last four. Two of them at Geelong and the other two at Werribee. So Geelong should win. They played very, very good football in the last 6 or 7 weeks.
But so is Podziadli. That's my only concern. And Podziadli will not line up there. Lonergan's back in the VFL, but will that be enough?
Brad Ottens is hopefully hitting top form.
Yeah, but 11 possessions last weekend. It's not someone who's going to go and dominate a game, is he?
No, but he has dominated. He's in a upwards moving graph. So he's just getting rid of for the finals in the AFL. He's not there to win them a game. But if he can win them a game, all the better.
I think he'd struggle against Alan Ops, yep, who's a physical defender who would just sit there and just punch him in the back of the head all day. Yep. So,
and there's no Harley in the squad.
No, Harley's been rested.
Yep.
If Harley wasn't captain of the football club, there'd be question marks over his future. So, yeah, I think Geelong will win, but it's a big day for Werribee. And, you know, Simon Atkins still, there's no decision there on the coaching role there next year, so there's still a lot to play for. And you wouldn't be surprised if they can turn it around. They bet Coburg last week. Every time you tip against them, you think they've got no chance. They win. But against the Cats, with the final still on the line, you'd think Geelong will be too strong. So that's a 7 o'clock game. We'll be live from 6:45 down there at Chirnside Park. Make sure you stay tuned with us all night tonight. And KC Scorpions versus Williamstown at KC Fields. The Scorpions are playing another home game there against Williamstown, who travel pretty well. And we're looking to maintain their top position, with North Ballarat and Williamstown both fighting for that mantle of finishing on top of the ladder at the end of the season. Jim, who's your tip?
They've clashed 10 times since 2003. Williamstown 7 wins and 2 wins to KC with 1 draw. Williamstown should win very comfortably. KC don't play very well against Williamstown, KC lost the last 2 before the bye, and that's a bit of a worry. I'm going for Williamstown.
Western Bulldogs actually signed 9 players through the week, and a lot of those players have been spending some time in the VFL in season 2009, Andreas Everett, and I thought Jared Grant was they picked him so early, they'd have to give him another tenure.
There's been a lot of criticism of Jared Grant on the...
He's a local boy, so we better be careful what we say.
It's not my criticism, I'm just passing on the word, I'm just what I saw.
Matthew Little's back in the lineup for the Williamstown side, he really does straighten them up. Interesting to see this forward line operate against the Scorpions. Brendan Stack, Jared Grant, Galea, Patrick Rose and Matthew Little, with young Joyce there to rotate off the bench. So you'd think that that forward line could kick them a winning score. Scott Meyer back in the lineup as well. He's a local boy. The Meyer family often come up and say hello to the broadcast area. But yeah, I think Williamstown will be too strong for the KC Scorpions. Good article by Paul Amy in this week's Leader, the local one. I don't know if you read it, Jim, about the KC Scorpions centre-half back, Peter Folkes. Travels from Oak Park every training session. So that's a big effort.
It's a long way.
I know you wouldn't drive from Oak Park to get here on a Saturday morning or be part of KC Radio, Jim. But
Peter Folkes... drive from Narre Warren to Werribee tonight, so...
Cranbourne
to Narre Warren.
Good performance there by... there's a 3 of them as well that travel all that way. James Wall, the captain, actually travels from that way across the city towards the KC Scorpions, KC Fields area. So Northern Bulllands versus the Coburg Tigers, Jim. Give us your stats and your thoughts. No major changes there for either side.
Yeah, this is one of the games that is probably more interesting to the Bulllands than the Tigers. Bulllands, they hold a 7-6 lead, but they've won 3 of the last 4. Coburg won 3 of the last 4, but I'm pretty sure they're a lot better in seasons previous to this one than they have been in this current season. Early on in this season, round 12, 2009, Coburg actually won by 36 points over the Bulllands. The Coburg have won just 2 of the last 7, and the Bulllands have won 4 of the last 6, one of them being a bye 5 rounds ago.
So after all that,
Bulllands should win.
So that'll be the end of Coburg.
I've written Coburg off ages ago, they're in trouble at the moment.
So big crowd expected down there at Windy Hill once again for the Bendigo Bombers versus North Ballarat. This would have been the regional game of the round had it kept the way it has, but without Bendigo Bombers playing in Bendigo, this game's at Windy Hill, and a pretty strong lineup on the field there. Winderlich, wonder if he'll play there, and Colson Hofaker, he's definitely one name that we like to mention during the broadcast. I can't see them winning a game to finish off the season, and they won't trouble North Ballarat at all, Jim.
Just one solitary win to Bendigo since 2003, and that was back in 2005, round 4. That was a 98-point win to Bendigo.
Now, that wasn't the last time the Bendigo Bombers won a game of football.
No, that was
either.
The last time they beat North Ballarat, sorry. So if they win, they'll probably win by a hell of a lot. So 98-point average winning margin. North Ballarat, their average winning margin against Bendigo is 34 points. But their average score is 18 goals, 11, 119 to Bendigo's 14, 12, 96. 14, 12, 96 is a very good average score, but not when you're up against 18, 11, 119. So North Ballarat will march on and win comfortably. They've only lost... North Ballarat are in a bit of a downer. They've actually lost 5 of the last 7 games. But I think I've I don't think I've made my adjustments to the win and losses in the recently because I've got Bendigo's winning. Well,
North Ballarat have only lost four.
Yeah, no, that's why I think that's from a. I think I cut and paste, and I get distracted when I'm doing these things, and I don't think I updated.
You've got to round 19, and there's some holes in your stats. But
no holes in my stats. I get distracted at times, and
holes in your stats.
No, it's just
they're not precise.
I can tell you, Bendigo haven't won since round 15 last year, and North Ballarat are marching on, and they should make the preliminary final at least.
Well, by 6 o'clock or by 5 o'clock this afternoon, we'll know who's going to play in the finals and who's not going to be. If Collingwood can win, I guess we won't know we can know by 5 o'clock. The finals can be wrapped up. There's still a couple of little differences there. But Collingwood, if they beat Frankston and Sandringham lose to Port Melbourne, the finals are done and dusted. And that's the way it will go this afternoon. So Coburg playing against the Bulldogs will probably just be playing for a bit of respect and pride and keep their momentum going towards the end of the season. And a bit of news coming out of Richmond, wasn't there, with the coach causing a bit of a stir. Wherever Hutchie is, though, it's a stir, isn't it? 4 hours he sat out in the cold. Hopefully it rained. And still no announcement there at Richmond. I think they might have to wait to the end of the finals if they want Ken Hinckley.
Yeah, I think everyone's putting their hand up to coach elsewhere.
How did you go? I know you put yourself, you sent an application through to the Richmond Football
Club. I made the last round. Unfortunately, the last round was cancelled. So they didn't want me. I don't know why. They didn't give me any valid explanation. So I just thought, well, if they don't want me, they can't have me. Simon!
Yes, Jim, how are you?
Pretty good, thanks.
All right. Yeah.
Morning, Simon Pitch, and welcome to the Saturday morning VFL Football Show.
So you've tidied this place up a bit.
Yeah.
Hey?
Oh, we've been doing our best.
What's been going on? There's a TV in here.
Yeah.
A whole lot. It looks very neat and tidy. I like that. When you walk in here, presentation is the main thing.
Yep.
I think the way that this radio station's now presented in the studio itself, it's very nice.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's
job well done.
Well, it's been on the go for a while now. Jim's been working hard doing it. Him and Bryce moved all the furniture out and put this
excellent.
Did this carpet in and
laid it myself.
Did you?
Yep.
Yeah, excellent.
Yep. Oh, wait, I'm going to say something very inappropriate
there. We will definitely not go anywhere near that.
The carpet I'm talking about.
Yeah. Sitting on nice chairs, and the amenities are extremely pleasant, and that's exactly what you look for when you walk into a studio or into someone's house or into a football ground.
Yeah, all we need is yes.
Now,
incense burning, and we've nailed it.
Walking into a football ground, what do you expect when you go to the football these days? You expect a grandstand, you expect chairs around the ground, you expect the ground to be in fairly good condition, you expect to go and get something to eat, something to drink. Well, what's wrong with people not wanting this stuff anymore? why are they more interested in watching games played on terrific grounds, nice surface, no water, no mud? What's wrong? They don't want to go and sit in the grandstand on wooden hard seats. Do what we do. Take a cushion, take a rug.
Yep.
Amenities. In the report that the VFL Victoria put out, they were talking about all that sort of stuff. They want to sit at home and watch the footy. They're looking at ways of presenting the VFL in getting more people to the... See? They're going to go to the footy during final series. They're not going to go to the footy during home and away series. Why? Because there's nothing on the line during the home and away, but there isn't finals. They'll go and sit in the grandstands. They'll go and sit on hard wooden seats. Doesn't matter what the facilities are like, people will still go to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
What Schwab was talking about, I think, is they want to work out why aren't the crowds going to the home and away games? That's the only thing.
You walk into the studio, because they go to one game and they have to stand outside for an hour ready to get in.
It's all about presentation here. It's all about what you see is what you get.
Well, I guess, I mean, you've raised an interesting topic, and we were talking about it earlier. I don't know if you're listening on the drive down. We went to Sandringham on Saturday. Now, you being a passionate Sandringham man of the past.
Well, when St Kilda are out the way, then I'll go back. They know that.
We have seen on Saturday against Frankston, which you'd say is one of the rivals, being just down the bay.
The Beach Road Classic, isn't it?
Yeah. It would have been 100 people. That's not exaggerating. And It was you just looked out and just looked vacant. Even the beer area down the back of the ground.
But when we arrived at the ground, what was the first
thing
we said?
Yeah, there was car parks. We could drive all the way up to the ground and
I looked down the road and I said to Kane, "There's no one here." And we were still a 5-minute walk away from the ground.
Yeah, it's sad. It really is. But just what Schwab was saying in last week's Football Record really strikes a chord, because they're looking at the reason why. And they put a census or a form out for people to... They did this years ago in the Footy Record. They did this when the VFL, AFL, VFA got all combined. They had a little bit in the Footy Record where you could actually put your thoughts on pen and paper. So they've obviously gone to the well again. Other thing I noticed too, the Footy Record's got smaller. Has the print got smaller
The TAC Cup is not in that one?
Yes, it is. Size of the book's got a bit smaller.
The price hasn't changed.
No, which is maybe a good thing, because
it used to be 36 pages, or was it?
I don't know, Jimbo. Size is slightly different from what it used to be. I haven't seen a Footy Record for a few months now, but that's struck me as well.
I've still got a heap of them at home. I'll have a bit
check the size out. You go to the milk bar these days, you get a Mars bar or a Cherry Ripe, and they've gone up but gone down in size.
Yeah.
Footy Record seems to me, just having a look at it, has gone down
in
size.
I'll do some investigative journalism.
Now, it's interesting that you have mentioned. I mean, you've broadcast a couple of games of the Amateurs League this year. What's the crowds like been there?
No, they don't get anyone. No, look, it doesn't matter. I think wherever you can go, I think Eastern Footy get good crowds out there.
So does the Casey Cadinia League around us.
Yeah, and I think maybe alcohol's got a fair bit to do with that, where you can take your own grog into the ground, or you can purchase it at the ground. I think that has got a fair bit to do with it.
Well, I went to the Junction Oval on Wednesday.
Amateurs, you can't. You're not allowed to take any booze in there at all.
I went to the Junction Oval on Wednesday for the Reckling competition, their grand final day, first of two. And I reckon during the A-grade grand final, there would have been over 1,000 people there. It was packed.
Yeah, but
and that's
final,
a normal crowd
final.
For them. This is a Wednesday afternoon competition.
Jim, I don't want to discredit Reklink, but a lot of those 1,000 people that are at that game had a lot of spare time on their hands.
Exactly.
Reklink grand final is a big day in their personal life, and they get out there and support it.
Yeah, but they
it's
can
a
still
one-off.
Get there.
They wouldn't be getting 1,000 people to an A-grade Reklink game on a Sunday morning. Anyway,
this is a good topic for discussion.
Where I was leading to this, Simon, was presented on the football show, and with the Dandenong Junior Footy League show following this one, the crowd violence that has erupted in season 2009 at junior football, it started last year. There's reports coming out of the Dandenong Junior Footy League that the president got hit, and then our local grand final got stopped 11 minutes before the end of the game because of violence in the drinking area. I mean, clubs that I can look at have to be local clubs. I don't get around to many other suburban grounds, but I mean, a lot of the football clubs in this area have put in dry areas and drinking spots. It doesn't curb the violence. Now, the violence has erupted over in the northern suburbs of Melbourne, and we saw that young person get hit from behind with a mallet as probably the more sickening incident to reach the papers, but it's time now that something really needs to be done. I don't know if it's banning parents, and I don't know if it's playing some of these games at neutral venues, but the football violence, which has been associated with soccer in the 70s and 80s, with many of the Victorian Premier League sides faced with racial tensions and many incidents in suburban soccer that was such a problem for them going forward. Now soccer's on the rise, and it seems that suburban football is starting to face these challenges that some of it is race actually based, and a lot of it is just thuggery.
Well, in my opinion, there's a lot of angry people out there, no matter what, whether it be in work, home life, or sporting life, and anyone at any stage will vent their anger, no matter where they are or who they're with, it'll happen. Just happens to be that sport, goals, games, whatever, sides being behind, parents wanting their kids to do a lot better than what they're doing, they want to get involved in it, they do, they get involved for the wrong reason. That's where it all stems from. I believe there's a lot of anger out there, a lot of people that have hardly got 2 cents to rub together, trying to support their kids, get them through school, do all this stuff, get them through, teach them sport, all that sort of thing, and all of a sudden it just overtakes and the parents just become angrier and angrier, and there's absolutely nothing anyone can do about it.
Well, I think the hardest thing, I mean, we're probably running pretty much over time here, and the boys will be tapping the window in a second, but it's not the clubs and the volunteers. They work so hard to try and maintain a positive image and limit the alcohol and other consumptions of stuff inside these venues. But when you get when it happens so consistently now, something has to happen, and I don't know if it's getting police involved at junior football, making clubs, which will be an added expense to these football leagues to have police at these venues. But I don't know what else can be used. I remember I grew up and there was an under 18 grand final in the Clacey Cadinia Football League, and a spectator was stabbed. Now that was at Crib Point, and the fight was very serious. It took on the family and members in the crowd, and it stuck with me for life. I mean, that was celebrating an under-18s win that erupted into a brawl outside of the ground between family and spectators. Now, for these kids growing up, they're going to have their football life tarnished by these terrible incidents that they won't be able to forget about, because those players playing in the Riddle Creek, I think, league it was last weekend, and seeing one of your friends get hit with a mallet is something that you don't need on a football field, and kids shouldn't have to be faced with it at all. So something has to be done. We can't just say people are angry and there's road rage and there's park rage at schools and all this sort of things where people are just losing their tops. Something needs to be done, because the violence that spurred onto the Melbourne streets and made it such a fearful place is now affecting suburban junior football. I mean, what's next?
So,
where's it go to from there? It all starts with something, someone getting angry.
Well, I'll tell you what, it'll start in here in a minute if we don't get off.
Well, it is 2 minutes past, so we haven't gone that long. I mean, I did start 5 minutes late because of the Casey Cadinia Footy League show. It all just spirals on. The boys are in there for an hour and a half, so let them have their thoughts on some of the violence happening at junior football. As you turn around, Simon, most of those kids actually do play in the Dandenong Junior Football League, and I think this year it's been pretty well behaved, the crowds out this way. Not many reports, so that's good to hear. And some good football happening out in the Dandenong Junior Footy League. So let's cross to Bryce and Alex as they take over the reins for the Dandenong Junior Footy League show.